Good morning. Good morning and welcome to EMF Camp. My name is Simon. My very small duty here is to very lightly convene this session, and all I'm really going to introduce to do good morning. I'm here to introduce Jessica Rose. Thank you very much. Oh no, I'm not.
We need volunteer shifts for these different things.
Oh, okay.
Okay,
I've just been given a new job to do. Apparently, we need more volunteers, people just like me. We need volunteers all day, regularly. We need stage and lighting between 7 and 12. Video camera operators, we need a lot of that. Stage lighting, 7 till 12. Youth, 1 till 4 and 4 till 7. Canteen, 5:30 till 8, 8 till 9:30. Stewarding, it says here, if you do any shifts between midnight and 6 in the morning, you get a double meal token. So there is a big list of jobs here that do need to be done. So I guess this is probably on the volunteer tent, unless you want me to run through all that again. No, let's go on with the talk. Jessica, thank you.
Good morning. Is this on? Yeah, that's clearly on. Good morning. Does everybody feel really, really good? I love how polite people are. They're like, yeah, I slept on the ground. It's great. So I'm going to be talking to you all about something that I think is really, really interesting, and it's just really about cognitive biases and how they impact our ability to see ourselves. To give you a little bit of background about myself quickly, my name is Jessica Rose, and I work in developer relations. And developer relations is this job that probably shouldn't exist. It's a little bit too good. But I get to travel around and just talk to people about the brilliant stuff they're building and the brilliant stuff they're doing, and just really, really brilliant people doing brilliant things. And that's interesting, but kind of challenging, because I'm talking to people a lot smarter than I am about things they're specialists in, and that doesn't always leave you feeling especially good about yourself. But to back it up a little bit, before I got into technology, I worked in education. So I'm really, really interested in brains. I'm really interested in how we learn. And if you stop and take just a minute, your brain is a wet bag of meat that does everything you care about, everything that's beautiful to you, everything you're motivated by. It's just this weird bag of meat in a bone box giving you the things you need. And at some point, we've got to give our brains back something. So when I was a teacher, I worked in language education and linguistics. And there's this concept in linguistics called the zone of proximal development. And this is a really great concept. This is all about what your brain needs to learn. And the idea of scaffolding in the zone of proximal development is saying, if you're working on a language task, or I would argue any task, if you're working on something that's too easy for you, you don't make any significant learning progress. If you're working a job where you already know how to do all the things, you can do that job, but your brain isn't getting any of the wonderful traction it needs to learn new stuff. But on the other hand, if you're doing things that are too high above your current level, you can't get any learning done, and you're not going to really be able to do a good job. If you're doing stuff far above your current level, you can dip up there very briefly to preview things with enough help, but you're not going to get any learning done. There's this little tiny sweet spot called the zone of proximal development, and that's where your brain wants to be to learn new things. Talking to fellow geeks, I always talk about this in RPG terms. If you're going around and bopping low-level slimes, you're not going to ever level up. And if you're just going directly to the boss, you're not going anywhere either. You need to be right there in that place that your brain needs to be happy in. And this would be fine, this would be amazing, but your brain, this weird wet bag of meat that gives you everything you care about, is terrible at self-assessment. You have no idea how good you are, and actually, you really have no idea how bad you are either. And at the end of the day, this is about cognitive biases. Anybody who's ever lazily put together a paper, or I guess a talk, has just copy and pasted the Wikipedia definition for something. And here's the Wikipedia for cognitive biases. A cognitive bias is My husband, who actually might be in the audience for a change, oh, hello, gave me this one, which is cognitive biases are your brain taking garbage data, coming up with really crappy conclusions, and then becoming absolutely dedicated to those. You get bad data in, you take a bad conclusion out, and you are never letting that go. So imposter syndrome, who knows what imposter syndrome is? Way. For those of you who don't know, I describe it as the cold, sick, sad, wet feeling that you get when you think, oh God, I have no idea what I'm doing, and everyone else seems fine. I'm gonna get fired, and then I'm gonna lose my flat, and I'm gonna have to live outside, and I live in England, so it's gonna rain. Just that whole process, your process may vary a bit. But it's the idea that you're just faking it, and everybody else is fine. But we're rational people, so we're gonna go ahead and go to some data. What does imposter syndrome do? I don't think that the scientific community is going to let me define it as this cold, sick, wet, sad feeling where eventually you have to live outside in the rain. Iams and Clance, back in the late 70s, did a study on high-achieving women in imposter syndrome. And they found out that they reported feelings of inadequacy, which is kind of in the definition, so okay. The people they found in the study avoided displaying their target skills. If anybody has ever been to a hackathon with me, I think this is legit true. This is very true, and that feels true forever. But they also found that the women in their study used charm and social mitigation. So they used soft skills. They were better at humans to get past the fact that they felt bad about this one piece of skill. And most importantly, and I think most interestingly, they reported putting in longer hours. They spent more time and worked harder at the thing they felt incompetent at. Okay, but who's impacted by imposter syndrome? Very, very quick, very anecdotal sampling. Anybody who's ever felt like you don't know what you're doing, but everyone else did, and oh God, they're going to catch me, put your hands up. Very quickly, look at who does not have their hands up. Y'all are gonna love this at the end of the talk. So Iams and Clance, let's come back to them. They did the first big study, and they found that high-achieving women were most often impacted. But they kind of went out to study high-achieving women. So Vera Vasquez and Corona went on to say, you know what, we think high-achieving women of color are most often impacted. And then I read a bunch of other studies and didn't want to do a bunch of slides. But there are tons of papers, and the papers kind of generally say that high-achieving minorities, people who are underrepresented in their environment, most often report feeling imposter syndrome. But we just did a quick and dirty sampling here, and we had sort of one, two, four, pretty much everyone saying, me. So what's with that mismatch? What's with us self-reporting a really wide variety of people feeling this? And the data saying, well, you know what, it's mostly the underrepresented, mostly women, mostly people who are underrepresented in their groups. I think there's a couple different reasons for that. I think you see women more likely to say, I feel like I'm not ready to do this. I feel like I'm faking it. I feel like an imposter. Because it's so much safer for women to say, I feel anything in our culture. If I say, hey, I feel like I don't know what I'm doing and everything's terrible. You're like, yeah, everything's terrible. And I think for guys, there's this extra pressure to be like, no, I don't have feelings, I'm fine, everything's great. Which looks like it sucks a lot. And I think representation has a lot to do with it as well. So I think if you are a weird, blobby, orange smiley face, and you feel a little bit miserable about things, you're like, I don't know what I'm doing, everything's a bit shit. But I go ahead and I look around and I say, well, I don't feel like I know what I'm doing and everything is a bit shit, but when I look around my office or my peer group or the people I really respect, a lot of them look like me and they sound like me and they went to the same schools as me. Actually, stuff's probably fine. They seem fine, they seem a lot like me, wicked. If I'm a weird, sad cat face, I know, I could have just used the emoji. And I have a look around and I'm like, I don't know what I'm doing. Everything's a bit shit. And everybody else seems fine. But they don't look like me, and they don't sound like me, and they didn't go to the same schools, and oh God, everything is terrible. And I think that a lot of times you see people report imposter syndrome at different levels based on their representation within industry because of internalized discrimination. So I work in technology, which is great. I strongly recommend it. But you do get a lot of messages to people who aren't well represented to say, oh, well, this isn't really for you. You don't really belong here. Do you need some help installing Ruby onto your computer? And I think eventually those messages, getting those messages day in, day out, are something that's really tempting to sort of onboard and internalize. And I think technology is doing some really interesting things to imposter syndrome. I love technology. And social media is really interesting. But social media gives us this weird opportunity to compare the whole of our lived lives. We're stuck living in our own weird meat bodies. We get to deal with all of our own experiences. But social media gives us a really unique opportunity to compare all of our lived experiences to a very carefully curated set of how other people live. I can see what my coworkers are doing. I can see what my heroes are doing. I can see what my peer group are doing. If this talk goes really well, I'm gonna brag about it across like four of those. If this is terrible and I leave in tears, like maybe Tumblr? But like, for the most part, when you're looking at a carefully curated media stream, if you're looking at people's social media, you're comparing the best of what they're doing to having to live the whole of your life. And it feels really unfair and really weird. But I think in the abstract, I promised how to fix imposter syndrome, which was mostly a lie. You can't really debug your brain. Your brain is still gonna take garbage data and build terrible conclusions, and it's all terrible, but pretty great. But all of you are very nice people, yes? That was a long pause and then a weird sound. You're like, oh, well, you know, technically, no. You're all very good people. This side of the room, I don't trust them at all. Being glorious people, and that side of the room, the first thing you care about is you want to know how to make it better for other people, right? Even that side of the room was like, yeah, I can't say no. Get out. The most important thing, the thing I would tell you before anything else, dear God, this could save your life, is do not tell other people they have imposter syndrome. I went to a student hackathon last year, and I was working on something and swearing quietly, and this adorable 18-year-old, just like a happy puppy, rocked up and was like, oh, it's okay, you just have imposter syndrome. And they were really cute, so they're still alive. But when somebody comes to you and they're telling you something, take them at the face value. They could be saying, I don't feel like I'm good enough at this. There is a whole parade of things they could be saying under that. They could be saying, I have a gap in my skill set. They could be saying, I don't fit into the environment. This is not a good culture for me. They could be saying, maybe I do have imposter syndrome. But don't label that for somebody else. Oh my God, if I could make everybody here give positive but meaningful feedback to stuff, who has complained on the internet when a software project or open source project did not work? There are a lot of liars in this room. Who here has gone out of their way to find somebody who built something they like and say something nice about it? You guys are weirdly nice. Again, except for that side of the room, which we're like, no. This one's not risk-free, but if you feel like you're in a position where you feel fairly safe in your context, model vulnerability. Say, hey, sometimes I have no idea what I'm doing. It's a really, really great way to say, you don't want to tell somebody else you have imposter syndrome. But if you tell them, sometimes I have no idea what I'm doing and I cry in the bath, it gives them a really great opportunity to say, oh, that's imposter syndrome. That's the idea that people I respect don't always know what they're doing. But for this side of the room, that's enough about other people. Let's fix it for you. Your brain is terrible at self-assessment. Assessment can often fix this. Take an incredibly valuable industry certification course, or do something that actually matters. Mentor somebody, teach somebody. If you're getting the opportunity to share your skill set and get actual feedback on the stuff you've built and the stuff you've done, that's gonna be incredibly valuable data to combat your meat brain being rubbish. It's a good illustrator, eh? You can't make your brain stop being stupid, but you can go ahead and recognize when you get into these loops. You say, oh God, I don't know what I'm doing. I'm gonna get fired. Everybody's gonna know I'm dumb. I'm gonna lose my flat. I'm gonna live outside, and it rains a lot. You could stop here. Like, that's a really exciting journey to go on, but not more than once or twice. Once you start going, I don't know what I'm doing, everything's terrible, recognize, look for those feelings, and say, ah, let's stop. And it's difficult, because I got a designer to do my slides, and when I was talking through this talk, I told my designer what I actually do when I get really stressed out. If anybody else eats cake in the bath, please see me after this, because I would like to build a case for this not being gross or weird. But this is super gross and weird. When you start to feel that weird breakdown cycle of everything's terrible, I don't know what I'm doing, I'm gonna get caught, stop, just stop. Take a break, walk away from what you're doing. You probably cannot take a bath and eat cake at work, but if you can, yeah. And find something that works for you that just interrupts that cycle. Play board games, read. A lot of people talk a lot of bullshit about how they exercise when they're stressed, and I don't believe them. But if that's you, again, come and tell me how you got into that habit, because I think that's a little bit better than cake. When you start feeling like you don't know what you're doing and everything is overwhelming and everything is terrible, just take a break. Do something that makes you feel okay. But I want to go on a really quick detour. I've been talking a lot about imposter syndrome. I kind of want to add another cognitive bias to this, reframe it a little bit. Iams and Clance, they said, you're going to feel real crappy. And that sucks. And you get to avoid displays of your target skills. And that sucks. But the use of soft skills to get around feeling bad, that's okay. And this is gorgeous. Has anybody ever used lemon juice as invisible ink? For those of you who haven't, you could put lemon juice on a piece of paper. It's invisible until you like heat it up, hold it to a light. Bank robber. Back in the 90s, robbed two banks in broad daylight after having covered his face in lemon juice. And he expressed some surprise when being arrested, because how would the CCTV have picked him up? And this is difficult because I like to imagine that these two dudes, so you or I would like look at this in the newspaper and be like, ah, stupid people. But there were these two researchers, Dunning and Kruger, who were aware that grant money exists. And I like to imagine they were like out on a patio eating breakfast, like grapefruit spoons and all that, and be like, Dunning, yes, Kruger, look at this. Oh, wow, lemon juice, yes, quite. Because somehow they're British all of a sudden. Like, and they decided to do a study with some wonderful grant money to see if stupid people know they're stupid. So they got about 2,500 people, and gave them a general aptitude test, like, hey, here, like if you've ever applied for a really shitty job, one of those tests, like, here are your cognitive skills. But they gave these people the test. They didn't really care about the scores. They cared about their self-assessment versus their scores. So when they got the tests back, they looked kind of like this. But what they did was they gave somebody a test, took the test away, and then said, hey, here's a graph. Show me on this graph how you think you did relative to your peers. You would be shocked. And Dunning and Kruger are good dudes. They said the unskilled instead of the stupid. They found that the least skilled artificially inflated their own worth. Well, this was hard for me, so it was hard for everybody, because I'm great. At the closer you get to being an expert, the more likely you are to underestimate your skill set. They found that the unskilled, because they're much nicer than I am, this is always infuriating because I can't see your faces And whenever I talk about this, there's somebody in the back going, oh, I work with that guy. The unskilled are wholly and completely unable to tell that they're unskilled. Stupid people do not know they're stupid. To make it better, the unskilled are completely unable to see skill in other people. They don't know they're stupid, and they don't know that you're not stupid. It is completely possible for somebody with this condition to fix themselves, but they can only do that if they recognize their own lack of skill, which, coming back to point one, they are never gonna goddamn do. Which is fine. After the waves of rage, the idea that stupid people get to go through life really confident and really chuffed about stuff, after that passed over me, I stopped and had a little bit more of a think. You say, this idea, imposter syndrome, this feeling like you don't know what you're doing, this feeling like everything's terrible, this feeling that you're an idiot, is you getting a really crappy error message from your brain. This is your brain saying, hey, you're not actually dumb. You're aware enough to be looking at your own skill set critically. Those Dunning-Kruger lemon juice people, that is probably not you. This is your brain's best stab at telling you you don't suck. And that sounds kind of miserable, but it is a wet bag of meat. You gotta give it some credit. So the next time you feel like you have no idea what you're doing and people are gonna catch you and you're gonna get fired, stop. I want you to reframe it. It's not that you're a failure. It's that you're really getting one over on your brain. You're taking this buggy, crappy error message and you're seeing it for the value it is. If you feel like you're scared and you feel like you don't know what you're doing, you're in the zone of proximal development. You're actually learning. You're getting things done. And you're probably not Dunning-Kruger. Thank you very much.
You have 8 minutes.
Hello. Thank you so much. I really enjoyed that. I feel so competent now. Do we have some questions from the audience? Who would like to say something here? Who would like? I'll bring the microphone over for you. A question from the audience. Oh, come on. Yeah, I have a hand up over here. Thank you.
Thank you.
Oh, okay. I've gone completely blank. Hi, so you mentioned various tactics that you can use to stop this cycle happening, like distracting yourself, going and doing something enjoyable, maybe even exercise, if that's someone that does that. And also how the data was showing that people are less likely to show their particular competencies in front of their peers. And have you, or in fact anyone in the audience, got any tips of getting past that stage when, you know, you really have got to do the work and you've got to show your competence?
I think that's, so the question is, how do you get past that stage where you don't want to show off the skill set you feel bad about? And that's really interesting. I'm not good at that yet. I've heard people, because I give this talk a lot and people give me their ways of addressing it. Folks have talked about becoming a specialist in a certain subsection of it. So that way, when there's a question about one specific area, it's something that your coworkers aren't likely to know, so you feel a little bit more comfortable in that space. I think just not working with jerks and putting yourself out there until it feels right is often helpful. Sorry.
All right, thanks.
I feel uniquely unqualified to answer that.
Okay, do we have someone else who would like to ask? Yeah, I spotted over here first, okay.
Hello.
Hello.
Having had to do lots of aptitude tests, Myers-Briggs, and all sorts of other things for various jobs I've done, is there any correlation between imposter syndrome and personality types or particular outcomes from those type of aptitude tests?
The video's running, so I don't want to say I don't really believe in those personality tests. I think that imposter syndrome is something that you see. It's really difficult because the studies done on it tend to find people willing to self-report. So it's really hard to see it tied to larger trends across psychology. So grant money is a thing. So if you fancy it, I'd be really interested in seeing a study around it, but I haven't seen any research to the effect. Sorry.
Okay. Another question here.
Good morning. Lovely talk. Thank you. Over here.
Hiya.
Hi. Do you recognize when you come to do a project or something you've never done before, you look at it and you are completely floored by it. You have fear, you have scared, and you really do get the imposter syndrome. Then you start reading up on it, and it's still quite scary, but not quite impossible. At some point, you're actually doing the job, and it's okay. But then the fourth stage is, well, anybody can do this. This skill isn't even worth mentioning because it's trivial. And everything seems to go through these four stages.
I think you've just described my week. Oh, God, I don't want to do this. Oh, this is going to go so badly. Oh, God, this is terrible. Nobody can do this. This is so hard. I'm a moron. Oh, that was actually quite easy. I shouldn't tell anyone. I think that cycles of avoidance tend to sit on top of imposter syndrome and make things worse and worse. But there's no really one clear way to say, oh, this is miserable. Just do it. I think that the same way language acts, like learning a new language, people always have to find the pathways that work the best for them. I think recognizing the process as you go through it and finding coping mechanisms that really speak to you personally. So I'm a big fan of going to work at home where no one can see me if I think something's going to be too hard, and then coming back a bit cocky 2 hours later to be like, yeah, it's fine, I know I can do that.
Hey, you. Okay, so, here.
Sorry.
There we are. We don't want to tell people that they have imposter syndrome because and we give feedback. But if you're managing people, then what's the best way of getting them to realize that, yes, they can do that? Because that comes up a lot where somebody goes, no, that's too much. I cannot do that. And you're like, dude, no, you can. You're good at this. And there's only so many times you can say that before they start not believing you.
So having been a teacher, I really, really love managing people. Yeah. You can tell people what to do. That's quite fun. So I really draw a lot of management process from having been a teacher, which whenever somebody's like, no, I can't do that. No, that's too hard. Have them talk you through. So be like, okay, well, talk me through how you would address this problem. Talk me through what you would do. And then spotlight where you think the problem's going to be. So I think a lot of times when you get people to articulate, first, I'm going to go and research this, and then I'm going to build that, and then I'm going to fix that. Once they actually say it out loud, once they articulate that they know the steps, a lot of times halfway through describing the problem, they'll just be like, oh, no, that's fine. Bye. Yeah, so just get people to talk through with you and ask really open-ended guiding questions. Say, okay, well, what kind of problems could you see if we did it this way? What do you think about doing it that way? So just kind of give them the opportunity to explore the problem with you and then send them back. Yeah.
Thank you. I have only one job to do, which is to try to keep this to time. So I'm actually going to take one more question, which I saw a hand over here. Yes, there we go.
Hi. It's really just a word of caution, really. I think it's great. It's great to maybe share with colleagues, but I think it's from experience, really. Sometimes you've got to be really careful that colleagues then don't use that against you. That's something I've experienced as well. So I just add a word of caution about sharing it. Share it with people you really can trust, okay?
Yeah, so I really love when people are able to model professional vulnerability, but do not do this unless you're in a place that has really good support, really good culture, and you're not working with assholes. Because if you say, hey, I don't feel really confident with this, or I need more support with that, if you're in a good working space, if you're in a good environment, if you're working with good people, you're gonna get people coming to support you. If you're in a crappy environment or a toxic environment where there's a lot of infighting, and you say, I don't feel confident around this, you'll just get people jumping on you to be like, oh, this person doesn't know what they're doing, you should give me a raise. I would be careful as well.
Jess, thank you. Thank you very much indeed. I think we better finish right there. Jess, thank you.